Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to today's afternoon satsang, where we will delve into yet another of the Navavidha Bhakti Marga, and today's theme will be Dasyam. But before we begin, we would like to offer our most humble pranams at the lotus feet of beloved Bhagwan. As always, Brother Prem is with me, and we are both looking forward to this discussion, this satsang, because our journey while preparing for this satsang has been so wonderful, so beautiful, has been so uplifting. We have come across so many wonderful examples and also some really profound insights which we hope we shall share with you for the 2 weeks of this fortnight. So with that brief introduction, I think we will begin the seventh in the order that comes, you know, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Vandanam, Archanam, Dasyam. So only Sakyam and Atma Nivedanam remain. So the seventh mode in this Navavidha Bhakti Marga, which is Dasyam. And to continue on this, I invite Prem, Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvind, and as you put it beautifully, indeed, as always, we are the first learners, and this is something which is such a beautiful concept itself. We've spoken so much about it, the Navavidha Bhakti, and how there are so many ways in which the Lord can be worshipped. And in fact, I think there's a discourse during the summer course where Swami is saying that in everything we're talking about right of choice. You know, in every aspect of life, we're talking about the freedom to choice and freedom to do things the way we want to do it. So how can you think that God will be so undemocratic, you know, that he will say that you have to worship me only with this form, or you should worship me only as a formless? He says God is like infinite. He allows you to approach him in any way you want, approach him with any relationship you want. And from his point of view, he ensures that as long as your approach is pure, as long as your intent is pure, that he will ensure that from that point, he will take you to the understanding of the infinite.
And that is an important point to keep in mind as we discuss the different types and different kinds of devotion. Because though the way the devotion manifests itself can vary, as Shravanam, that is listening, or Kirtanam, Padasevanam, the most important is the intent, the motive, the why behind what we are doing. See, this is the nine modes of worship, the nine paths of bhakti, they can be considered to the what, answer to the question what should I do. You can do any of these, and they also answer to a great extent how should I do,
right?
You know, because that's why there are nine types. What should I do? Bhakti. How should I do? Yeah, there are nine types to do it. But more important than the what and how is the why I do it. If the why goes wrong, then the what and how don't matter. So that is why it is so important to keep the why, the motive, always in our mind, in our hearts as well. Because see, as we have gone through all these different, till now we have covered six different forms of devotion. And as we have gone through all of these, we have realized that once we go deep, once we go to what each path actually stands for, there is no difference between the different paths. They are all the same. It's only at the superficial, at the superficial or surface level that they appear to be different. Deep within, at a genetic level, they are all leading to the same reality, the same divinity. So, that is why more important than how it manifests is the divinity or the reality that is the common basis. In the same way, more important than what we do or how we do is why we do. There's no debating that.
You know, having said that, I was once going through a discourse of Swami, and you know, this is a question which comes up to everybody. What is the purpose of life? Okay, and I was just wondering if there is a certain concept we can say, and Swami says that this is the purpose of life. Of course, we've heard Swami say that the purpose of human life is to be of service to others, and the purpose of
go back to the source.
Right? I mean, I just wanted to pick up one discourse where Swami is categorically saying that this is the purpose of life. And I was surprised to find this particular discourse where Swami was speaking the entire discourse on what is the purpose of life without mentioning what is the purpose of life.
Do you remember the discourse?
I don't recall the discourse. Okay. But in the entire discourse, Swami was talking about the importance of asking this question of what is the purpose of life, almost leaving it open-ended, saying that, you know, what the answer comes finally does not matter, because you will not be there to qualify it as right or wrong. You know, the whole journey is a process of removing yourself. But the importance of asking, you know, it's almost like that. Many scientific studies you would see that the scientists would start searching for something and end up discovering something completely different. Or they might just start searching just to know deeper truths, and they end up with the discoveries which probably they never wanted to find in the first place. So what they set off with was an open mind and sincerity. And sometimes even not knowing the purpose of what we are doing. I think that's what we have seen in some of the, you know, the nine paths, some of the paths which you have seen, especially paths like Vandanam or paths like, you know, Shravanam.
Kirtanam.
Where you don't know the validity of what you're hearing. Or you don't know what you're listening, where it's going to take you, you have no idea. But it's just that you're going with the moment. They said, now I'm feeling nice listening to it. You know, let me be open to it. Let me be sincere to the experience I'm undergoing now. Let me be truthful to what I'm, you know, experiencing right now. I think that earnestness, that sincerity itself, maybe sometimes you don't even have to know what you're looking for, but as long as that openness and sincerity is there, you will be led.
Very interesting, because it reminded me of my own personal experience, you know. A personal experience of the truth that you need not know the actual end as you begin. Okay. All you need is, yeah, sincerity, openness, all the virtues. You know, we often think that, you know, virtues are a means to get to the goal. They are, but we are not able to imagine the goal, as you rightly said. It was sometime during my first year in MSc. I had a dream in which Swami was reading my letter, and among the various things that he did, he called me, he underlined two words, and he told me to focus on that.
Okay.
I looked at that word, sorry, not two words, just one word. And that word there was Jnana, J-N-A-N-A. So Swami said, Jnana. So I looked at him, he said, yeah, read this. So that was a dream. So I didn't know what should I do if Swami says, read that, read Jnana. So, it so happened that on that same day, somebody gifted me a Bhagavad Gita book. And it's that Nightingale kind of pocket book. It's so small, it's just 2 inches by 1 inch. Very handy, very nice, a good gift also. So for my birthday, somebody gifted that. And I got that book and I was just flipping through the pages. And all the 18, it's basically all the 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita with their translations, that's all. There is no interpretation, there is no in-depth commentary or anything.
Right.
On one side you have the Sanskrit shloka, the other side the meaning, that's all. So each chapter, there is the first chapter, the second. Jnana Yoga, when I opened that, you know, all the chapter names are written in an italics font. And this Jnana Yoga, when I saw the word Jnana Yoga, it hit me, because the Jnana written there and the Jnana in the letter that Swami pointed out were exactly the same. So I felt, oh, maybe Swami wants me to read Jnana Yoga. So that is what I began with. You know something interesting, Prem? You start reading Jnana Yoga, you will possibly get a little frustrated, because never does Krishna mention how on earth you're going to get jnana. He begins by saying, a jnani is like this, a jnani is like that. In this situation, jnani does this. In that situation, jnani does that. Sincerely, you know, because Swami had told it and I was convinced that this was what Swami was referring to, I was sincerely reading, but I was getting frustrated saying, Swami, all this is fine, but oh Krishna, tell how on earth do you get jnana? And there's no mention at all. You run pages after pages, shloka after shloka, shloka. He's just describing the virtues and the qualities of a jnani. And I'm saying this is of no use for me, because I'm not a jnani. Let me become a jnani and then I will have these virtues. You know, I can possibly use this as a kind of a comparison to know whether I'm a jnani or not. But this is only making me feel miserable about myself, because it just shows me what I'm not. How do I become this? Somewhere towards the end of that chapter, maybe in the second last or third last shloka, I don't remember exactly now, there is only one line that mentions how you can get jnana. And you know what is that line? It says that when all the following, you know, traits or qualities are there, The Lord is happy, and as a fruit, He gives jnana. So guess what? There is nothing you can do to get jnana, you know. At the end of that, my conclusion was that the only way to get jnana is the Lord has to confer the jnana. It is much later that, you know, it struck me that the reason, the reason the chapter is structured that way is because you do all these. These are the qualities expected of a jnani, you know. So, there's no way to know whether you're a jnani or not, but start imbibing. You can definitely start inculcating the qualities, because those are qualities you know whether you have it or not. Equanimity, forbearance, sukha dukkhe same kritva. Can I keep myself in sukha and dukha, that is in happiness and sorrow? Can I keep myself level minded? That is something that I can, you know, measure and improve on. And as the Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita there very clearly, when the time is right, that is not said there, that I am adding.
Mm-hmm.
The Lord Himself to a person who has these virtues will give jnana. That's it. So it's just about, I feel it's like riding a bicycle, you know. There is no guarantee that you learn it in 2 days or 3 days or whatever. But it's like, how do you ride a bicycle? When you ride a bicycle, two wheels, you don't need to focus. You're describing all the qualities of riding, but how do you ride a bicycle? Yeah, you start off and, you know, you try to achieve that. You keep falling in the process, no problem. But once you achieve these virtues, in due course, jnana automatically comes. So, therefore, as you said, you know, all this was triggered by the statement that you said, that what is most important is to have an open mind, sincerity, and I also will say faith, because a lot depends on faith, if not for which you will question at the very beginning itself, why on earth am I doing this? What on earth? No, why should I do this? Why should I? Because you will see some others who are not being so good, getting away with doing what is wrong and in fact benefiting from it and appearing successful also, becoming successful also. So you will need tremendous faith along with sincerity and open-mindedness to pursue and finally achieve your goal.
And in fact, this is the very quality which probably is the centerpiece of the path we are going to talk now. Because, you know, as a devotee, you talk of Shravanam, you talk of Kirtanam, there is a question of a very strong choice. You know, let us say you become a bhajan singer. And we know our brothers here who go around giving workshops on bhajan singing, what Swami has said, you know, how a bhajan should be done. There's so many rules and regulations that you have to keep in mind. I think any of these paths you take, there is this constant question of, you know, how it has to be done. You know, this is my goal. How is the best way I can reach it? There is a sense of conscious understanding of what I have to do, what is right and wrong, how do I get there. But we are coming to one path where it is almost opening up to that idea, saying that I have no idea where I'm going to go. I have no idea what has to be done. You tell me, I do it. You know, a state where only one choice is made. You know, I want to be obedient to you, and I am not going to question how, what I mean, why I'm doing a certain thing, where this thing is going to lead me, what is the fruit I'm going to get at the end of it. My relationship is to obey whatever you say. And I think that is what defines this path we're going to talk about today.
And I think that is possibly the reason also why, if we look at the Navita Bhakti Marga as a staircase, Dasyam comes so high on the staircase, because even in the previous path that we spoke of, that is Archanam, we speak about offering all that we do, our actions, our accomplishments, everything to the Lord. Here it's one step higher, because it's not that I do whatever I do and offer it to you. Here it's like I do whatever you want me to do. Your wish is my command. If there's no command, I have no wish.
Right. And that is, you know, in a sense, it in the worldly level, it looks like probably a lesser step. You know, where you are in a subordinate state, you know, where in the Archanam, you are the achiever. You achieve everything and you have the humility to, you know, in that sense, humility in capital H, to offer it to the Lord. But here you are saying it's almost like in a state of potential energy, saying that I have not done anything, but whatever I do, it will be for you. And you are in a state where, you know, you're perfectly available completely. You know, that's something which is a very important concept in Dasyam. We'll come to that later. But that, I remember, you know, we used to have this joke, but now when we talk about Dasyam, it looks like, I mean, I'm not qualifying ourselves as suitable for examples for that, but just a joke which we used to make casually, when we were all students and when we would want to work in Swami's institutions after we finished, there would be a lot of elders who have come to Swami after their retirement. You know, they would have been, you know, in very good administrative posts, or they would have had very successful business, and post-retirement, they would come and serve Swami in the ashram. And I've had a lot of those elders coming and telling us, that you're too young to work for Swami now. You know, you have to go out into the world, you have to achieve, you have to make a name for yourself, and then come back and offer it to Swami, right, you know.
Mm.
And, you know, we used to make a joke, we're saying that here are these people who have offered all their achievements to Swami, and here we are who have offered our achievements to Swami even before we have achieved them. And I think that is precisely what Dasyam is, whether we followed it or not wholeheartedly, I'm sure I can't say that.
Mm.
But I think that attitude, that, you know, I'm not bothered about what are my talents, what I can achieve, what will be my worth if I go out, but I am here for you to do what you want me to do.
Because as you said, you know, in that statement also, there is a kind of ego that builds in, that I will go achieve and come and offer my achievements to you. In Dasyam, as you said, there is no feeling that I wish to achieve anything, you know. Lord, whatever you wish is my command, I will do that. I don't look whether it achieves something or not. And the example that Swami gives for Dasyam, I'm sure that once we get to know it, there'll be almost, there can be no debate on that. And I think we will introduce our hero via a song. We will take a break. In the break, we will play the song that glorifies our hero. Because, you know, this hero is such, I'm sure all of you might have already guessed who this hero is, but he is such that it's difficult to say whether he was a servant of the Lord or the Lord was his servant, because it looks like each had the other's back. You know, it becomes such a kind of a loop. It's so magnificent and it's so apt that this hero has been regarded as the example for Dasyam. So don't go anywhere, dear listeners. After this break, we'll come and discuss further on this theme.
वायु कुमारा वानर वीरा वायु कुमारा वानर वीरा अति बलवंता हनुमंता अति बलवंता हनुमंता केसरी नंदन अंजनि पुत्रा केसरी नंदन अंजनि पुत्रा जय हो पवन कुमारा जय हो पवन कुमारा जय हो पवन कुमारा जय हो पवन कुमारा वायु कुमारा वानर वीरा अति बलवंता हनुमंता केसरी नंदन अंजनी पुत्रा जय हो पवन कुमारा 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 वायु कुमारा वानर वीरा.
So dear listeners, that is the hero. Yes, I'm sure all of you would have guessed it. Hanuman. Hanuman is a hero who, you know, we had discussed this just a few weeks before when we were talking about the Ramkatha Rasavahini. Hanuman in the Vidyagiri hill occupies the highest position, you know. In the hill we have all the different gods. We have Krishna, we have Shiva, we have Zoroastra, we have Jesus. But it looks apparently paradoxical that higher than all the gods is the devotee, because Hanuman is a devotee. But that is the kind of importance Swami gave to Hanuman, and we shall see, hopefully through our satsang this week and the next, on what is the grandeur, what is the beauty, what is the profundity of this path of Dasyam that Hanuman embodies.
And absolutely, you know, how many times Swami has spoken about Dasya Bhakti, and he would say that it's Hanuman. When I think of it, what makes him stand out as an example of Dasya Bhakti? Because even in the Ramayana, you have somebody like Sugriva, somebody like Vibhishana. I think all of them in the level of offering their talents and their services to Lord Rama, they were equal. Like, we are going through that particular part in the Ramayana, the war, where each of them equally are serving the Lord. In fact, there is one episode, we won't narrate it during the Ramkatha, because I'm not sure whether it's there in any of the standard Ramayanas. I remember hearing it in one of the talks, where they say Vibhishana is, you know, as we are seeing, he aids Rama in so many ways in the battle, by giving a few secret tips about the Rakshasas and all of them. So apparently in one of the battles, one Rakshasa comes and nobody is able to slay him. And then Vibhishana goes to Rama and says, you know, this Rakshasa, his life is in his arms. So you have to chop off his arms, and that's the only way he can be killed. So then Lakshmana shoots an arrow, and you know, this Rakshasa is killed. But immediately after that, it seems Vibhishana goes to that Rakshasa and starts crying, you know, holding the body and crying. And all the Vanaras and Sugriva are wondering what happened. That's when they come to know that that Rakshasa was actually Vibhishana's own son.
Hmm.
You know, that was the level of surrender even of Vibhishana, and we know of Sugriva, Angada, all of them. But what makes Hanuman stand out as a Dasi Bhakti, as an epitome of Dasi Bhakti? I'm only reminded of that scene where, you know, the first time where he declares that I am a servant of Lord Rama. You know, imagine that scene. Here is this formidable warrior. He has gone past this defense of Lanka, which no warrior has ever done. You know, here is Ravana, is such a imposing warrior, and this single monkey has gone past all the defenses of this Lankan army, and finally he's face to face with Ravana. And we know that story of he making a seat for himself where he's, you know, higher than Ravana in his throne, and he speaks to him, and he has displayed his valor in ways that probably nobody in Lanka has seen. And he's able to converse with Ravana with the same scholarship. That is one of the things which some of the Ramayanas say. With the same level of scholarship, he's conversing with Ravana. But in spite of it, when asked, who are you? You know, with complete pride, he says, I am a servant of Lord Rama. He says, Dasoham Kosalindrasya.
Pride at being a servant. It's right. Indeed fascinating. In fact, when you were narrating that story, I just remembered that, you know, I have heard that story of Vibhishana's son from Swami himself. Swami has narrated it two, three times. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the exact manner in which he can be killed. I am not remembering that. But definitely Swami has narrated how Vibhishana gets some tears, and Rama asks, though Rama knows, he still asks Vibhishana, saying, why is this that never you have been like this, today you are shedding tears. And Swami in his discourse says, what to do, Rama? I have decided to dedicate my life to you, yet there are a few strings of fatherly affection, fatherly attachment that still remain in me. I am grateful to you, Rama, that you severed those also today, because attachment is not good. And then he reveals that this is my son. And Swami in the discourse, I'm pretty sure it was a public discourse, though I'm not remembering when, Swami said that this was done by Rama in order to highlight to everyone else the level of surrender and the level of sacrifice that Vibhishana has done for the sake of the Lord. Speaking of the same, you know, there are many times, Ramayana is possibly one of the, is possibly the favorite epic for for Swami to use examples from. Though Swami quotes and gives examples from the Mahabharata, I think nothing as extensive and as intensive as he has done from the Ramayana. In fact, brother Sai Giridhar was narrating the other day as to how Swami in Kodaikanal asked, tell me who are the five dearest to Rama in the Ramayana. So, you know, different people, yeah, all the names started popping up, from Sita to Mother Kausalya to Kaikeyi to Sumitra, Lakshmana, Guha, Shabari, Vibhishana. Swami said, no, I want a complete list of five. Who can get all the five right? And nobody could get, you know, different people got some common names. Hanuman, of course, figured in all the lists, but nobody could get the list. So, what I wanted to impress on was the fact that in everybody's list, what Giridhar says, the common hero who was there in all lists is Hanuman.
Okay.
Now, that is the thing I want to lay emphasis on, but for the sake of completion, let me complete the incident, what happened there. Swami gave the answer in a manner, I'm sure once I reveal that, we will never forget it. He gave the answer in the form of a bhajan. Do we have the bhajan?
Yeah, I think we can see that bhajan. Right?
So, Swami stated each line of the bhajan, and there are five lines in the bhajan that glorify Rama with different aspects, connecting him to different people in the Ramayana. And Swami said, these are the five who are dearest to Rama. So, dear listeners, we'll just play that bhajan. Enjoy the bhajan, and as you enjoy the bhajan, let's contemplate on Rama. Let's also think of how Swami narrated, singing out each of these lines to show who are the five favorites of Rama.
मारुति सेवित राम चरण भरतार्चित श्री राम चरण
So there are the five, dear listeners. Kausalyatmaja Ramacharan, Kausalya, Mother Kausalya. Vaidehi Priya Ramacharan, Mother Sita. Hanumat Sevit, Maruti Sevita Ramacharan, that is Hanuman. Bharata Shritashri Ramacharan, that is Brother Bharata. Ahalyodharaka Ramacharan, that is Ahalya. So Swami said that the five dearest to Rama were Kausalya, Sita, Hanuman, Bharata and Ahalya. So that was the incident there. But yeah, I narrated this incident just to show, even among us mortals, in all our lists also, the common factor, as Giridhar narrated, was Hanuman. Hanuman is definitely, you know, no wonder that this is the pride of position given to Hanuman, because he is universally revered. Not only does Rama and the gods consider him as the ultimate, but even us mortals also view him so highly, and so it's no surprise that Swami has given Hanuman as the example epitome for Dasyam.
Right, and now going into what Hanuman brings, with that attitude of dasyam. You know, I think that is what we need to look at, and that is what is the learning for us.
Mm.
And first of all, as we said, you know, the ability to put behind all his achievements as an individual to start with, and to put ahead the servitude to Rama as his greatest qualification. And as we've seen, I think, you know, in the Ramkatha Rasvani, what we're going through in the satsang, what we've seen is, not only has he been able to project his, his status as a servant of Lord Rama as the highest thing, but the ability to say that whatever I've achieved even before I came to Rama was also because of Rama. You know, that realization which comes, you know, after coming to Rama and saying that, you know, here's my Lord, to be able to say that I've achieved so many things before, but now I can say with, you know, much confidence that even all of that was achieved only because of the grace of Rama. I think that humility which comes with Dasyam is the standout here.
You were impressed with Hanuman's humility. I was really impressed with his pride, in the sense that when, as you narrated that episode, when Ravana asks him who you are, with great pride he says, I am the servant of Rama. You know, when I heard that statement, I went into a kind of a flashback mode where I was thinking of various occasions on which I have introduced myself to others.
Mm-hmm.
One thing is, never has my introduction of myself to others been as brief as Hanuman's. Hanuman did it in just one statement. It's actually Dasoham Kosalendrasya. Means I am the servant of the emperor of Kosala. You know, the kingdom of Kosala. But even on occasions when it has been brief, when I look, I always introduce myself in a manner in which the other person can relate to and hold me in high esteem. Let me make it clear. For example, if in a bus I meet a person who is interested in cinematography and photography, I introduce myself as a person who has great interest in photography, who has done photography for so many years. At the same time, if I happen to meet somebody who loves reading books and this, I introduce myself as a writer. Some other person, you know, I remember when I was asked to help teach a child, you know, just mm-hmm. some subject, I tried to impress the child by saying that I am a gold medalist in the subject concerned, which is chemistry. Mm-hmm. So I tried to impress the child that, you know, what I say, it means a lot. And when I'm asked to give a talk in a Sai center, possibly, I project myself as a Sai student. I was just thinking, you know, because when I saw this example, I felt how I introduce myself is purely based on the way I can benefit maximum from the introduction. I was thinking, is it possible that whoever asks me, who are you, will I ever tell, I am a Sai devotee? Guess what, Prem? Never in my life I have introduced myself like that to anybody. Never. I am a Sai devotee comes only as a later revelation. And I must confess that many times, you know, I feel scared that, oh God, if I start with this, maybe what they will think of me, they'll think I'm mad. So I try to set up a situation where I show them that I'm a sane guy, I'm a very smart guy, I'm a super intelligent guy, I'm an awesome guy, and then tell, you know what, the super intelligent guy, the awesome guy, the wonderful guy that you know, worships Sati Sai Baba. So I'm hoping that because they've already seen my intelligence, my awesomeness, my smartness, they will not outrightly condemn my devotion to Sai Baba because, hey, if he's having all this, there must be something in it. But I have never, never, ever had the courage to openly just introduce myself saying, I'm a devotee of Swami, I'm a student of Swami, I'm a servant of Swami. You know, I really felt I've got miles to go before even thinking of the level at which Hanuman is, because here he is going to a kingdom which is an enemy kingdom. Possibly I was thinking, suppose you are in the kingdom of Saudi Arabia and you are on a Ramzan day, you go out and publicly state that I am, you know, something equivalent, more than that, because even in other places there will be some who are extreme, some who are non-extreme. Here it's a Rakshasa kingdom. And when he's asked for the introduction, in spite of having a huge resume, in spite of having a biodata that possibly nobody, you know, what is this bio data? It's jumped across an ocean right now. You can just tell, you know, I'm the guy who has slaughtered everyone and jumped across the ocean and come to put fear into your hearts. He could tell, I'm the guy who has swallowed the sun even before I joined primary school. You know, these are the kind of achievements he has got, and yet he says with great pride, I'm a servant of Rama. That's the only introduction he gives. Really, hats off to this pride that this is a special kind of pride, I say, because this pride shows the humility of Hanuman. It's a lesson for each and every one of us to learn, especially for me, I feel.
But absolutely. See, one thing is going and talking about it. But there might be many reasons why people might not want to talk about it, even because, you know, my greatest achievement I will not show off, right?
Even
that is there.
No, that's why I said with my own case,
right.
I felt that.
I mean, at the same time, I'm just saying that can we get up and at least within, are we feeling that this is my greatest achievement? You know, to start off with, talking is a secondary thing. You know, as we said, Shravanam and Kirtanam. Kirtanam is almost like you retweeting a tweet which comes to you. It's almost like, I mean, talking to another person is actually a secondary thing. At least to our own self, when we get up, are we feeling that this is my greatest achievement? Because as you said, you know, somebody asked me, what are you? I might say, I'm an MSc, I'm a master's in science, or, you know, I've done these courses. You know, I am holding out a degree which I slogged for 2 years, or probably even if you put all my schooling together, 14 years of slogging and 15 years of slogging has resulted in 2 degrees, and I hold it out with pride. If I really feel that this opportunity to be a devotee of Swami, to be of service to Swami, has been earned over many, many lifetimes, internally won't I feel that this is the greatest achievement I've had? I mean, this is the one which I can hold out and say that, you know, this is my greatest achievement. I think that's what Hanuman did. You know, I don't know how many births I've struggled to call myself a Dasa of Lord Rama, and this is my greatest achievement. I think that's where Dasyam comes out as so much higher than all of these things. You know, so non-committal compared to Dasyam are the other paths of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, you know, all are done silently. But here is Dasyam who's saying that, you know, this is my degree, this is my identity, you know, this is how I'm identifying myself. You know, from Swami's point of view, he never expects it. I'm reminded of a very sweet incident which Geeta Mohan Raman's narrates, you know. In one of the interviews, she was there. There was another family which was there, and I think they were also from the United States. And this mother was very emotionally attached to Swami, the other lady in the interview. And there was a very silent teenager in the family. You know, she was quietly sitting in a corner. And this mother was going on saying, Swami, we do bhajans in our houses, you know, we do this, and we're all the time thinking of Swami in the United States and all that. So then Swami was looking at this little child, who was a, you know, 13-year-old or something like that. And Swami was trying to engage her in a conversation, her or him, I'm not sure, engage this child in a conversation. Then Swami said, your mother keeps big pictures of me all over the house, right? And immediately this little child's eyes became big. He said, yes, Swami, he said. And you feel embarrassed when you bring your classmates home, right? No? She said, yes, Swami. And because you don't know what to explain to these American kids who come home. So then Swami told this kid, I will give you a solution. So this child was all ears, you know, yes, Swami, what should I tell? You tell your classmates that this is your geography teacher. You know, here is Swami saying that it's okay, you just tell that, you know, this is a grandfather or a geography teacher or something. Swami doesn't expect that of us. But if we give value to this quality, I mean, this achievement of us, that, you know, Swami, I've become a Sai devotee, I've become a Sai student, I've become, you know, I work at Radio Sai, whatever it is, whatever we have achieved, if we believe that this is the greatest achievement, then we will have no hesitation in holding it out as our achievement.
I'm sure that our discussion will be quite heavily based on this episode that takes place between Hanuman and Ravana, where Hanuman introduces himself as the servant of Rama. I think we have a discourse clip on this same dialogue that takes place between Hanuman and Ravana. Before we proceed with the discussion, it would be better that we listen to Swami's narration, because apart from the crux, which is Dasoham Kosalendrasya, there are so many other things that Swami reveals in that discourse which will definitely give us so much inspiration and thought to progress along in this satsang.
I think this was one of the Chinnakathas which Swami narrated, and the year is 1997, 1st of October.
Sarvada, Sarvakaleshu, Sarvatra, Ramachintanami.
At all times, at all places, under all circumstances.
Yelanti paristhitilo kudu, ahankaramu, adambaramanitindi, pradarshinchinatundi vadu kadu, Hanumantudu.
At no, in no time he had any trace of ego or pomp.
Nirantaramu kudu, Ramunu chinta, chala deenude.
He felt like a servant in front of God.
కానీ రావణ దగ్గర పోయినప్పుడు వీరుడే.
But in front of Ravana, he is a man of valor and courage.
కనుక రాముల దగ్గర నిరంతరం కూడా తాను దాసుడిగానే ఉండేటువంటి వాడు.
ఇన్ ఫ్రంట్ ఆఫ్ రామా హీ రిమైండ్ ఎ సర్వెంట్.
అశోక వనంలో ఇష్టానుసారం సంచరిస్తున్నాడు హనుమంతుడు.
హనుమాన్ వెంట్ రౌండ్ ఆల్ అశోక గార్డెన్ యాజ్ హి
లైక్డ్. అనేక మంది రాక్షసులు ఏనాడు చూడలేదు కోతిని, ఈ కొత్త కోతిని చూసేసి ఆశ్చర్యంగా అందరూ చూడటానికి అని వస్తున్నారు గుంపులు గుంపులు.
దేర్ ద డెమన్స్ నెవర్ సా ఎనీ మంకీ బిఫోర్, దే వాంటెడ్ టు సీ దిస్ ఫన్నీ మంకీ దేర్.
ఒక రాక్షసుడు ప్రశ్నించాడు,
ఎవరు
నీవు,
హూ ఆర్ యూ,
ఎంత వినయంగా చెప్తున్నాడు.
హి సెడ్ ఇన్ ఆల్ హ్యూమిలిటీ,
దాసోహం కోసలేంద్రస్య, నేను రామచంద్రుడి దాసుడను.
అండ్ సర్వెంట్ ఆఫ్ రామచంద్ర.
ఆ సమయం నందు కూడాను ఎంత మనసు మృదుమధురమైనటువంటిదిగా తోచింది.
ద హార్ట్ అండ్ ద మైండ్ ఆర్ నెచర్ ఆయన.
రామ విషయం లోపల సర్వమును లీనమైనటువంటి వాడు.
ఇన్ఫాక్ట్ హీ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ ద టోటల్ మర్జర్ విత్ ది డివైన్.
అలాంటి రాముడు ఏ విధమైనటువంటి వాడు, తక్కువ చేసిన వాడు అవుతాడా? రామునికి బలం లేకుండా పోలేదు, రామునికి సర్వశక్తిమయుడు రాముడు.
రామ హ్యాస్ పవర్, హీస్ ఆల్ పవర్ఫుల్.
ఇలాంటి పవర్ ఎట్లా తెలుస్తుందంటే తన భక్తిలోనే తెలుస్తుంది.
యు కెన్ అండర్స్టాండ్ ది పవర్ ఆఫ్ గాడ్ ఓన్లీ
తన విశ్వాసం అంత గాఢంగా ఉండటం చేతనే రాముని యొక్క శక్తి కూడా తాను గాఢంగా విశ్వసిస్తూ వచ్చాడు.
యాజ్ హిస్ ఫెయిత్ ఇస్ డీప్ రూటెడ్ హీ కుడ్ నో ద పవర్ ఆఫ్ రామ.
తనలో ఆత్మవిశ్వాసం లేకపోవడం చేతనే దైవం పైన పూర్తి అపనమ్మకం వస్తుంటుంది.
బికాస్ వన్ డస్ నాట్ హ్యావ్ ద సెల్ఫ్ కాన్ఫిడెన్స్, హీ డెవలప్స్ డిస్బిలీఫ్.
యత్ భావం తత్ భవతి,
యాజ్ ఇస్ ది ఫీలింగ్ సో ఇస్ ది ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్.
ఇవంతా నీలోని భావంలే కాని దైవంలోనివి కాదు.
దేర్ ఆల్ యువర్ ఓన్ ఇన్నర్ ఫీలింగ్స్, నథింగ్ టు డూ.
నీలోని లోపములే కాని దైవంలో లోపమే లేదు.
దేర్ ఆల్ యువర్ ఓన్ ఫాల్ట్స్ అండ్ మిస్టేక్స్, నథింగ్ టు డూ విత్ గాడ్.
కనుకనే మనము అన్ని విధాల కూడా బుద్ధి చెప్పవలసిన దగ్గర చెప్పాలి.
సో వీ షుడ్ టీచ్ అట్ ద రైట్ టైం,
అనుభవించవలసిన దగ్గర అనుభవించాలి.
అండ్ వీ మస్ట్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ అట్ అన్ అప్రోప్రియేట్ మోమెంట్.
అదే హనుమంతుడు ఎంత శాంతంగా, ఎంత ప్రీతిగా, ఎంత సౌమ్యంగా, ఎంత ఆనందముగా అన్ని విధాల కూడా రామచిక్ సేవలు చేసుకుంటూ వచ్చాడు.
రామా సౌర్ హనుమాన్ సౌర్ రామ పీస్ఫులే విత్ ఆల్ హిస్ ఎండియర్మెంట్ అండ్ లవ్ ఇన్ ఎ సాఫ్ట్ విత్ ద స్పిరిట్ ఆఫ్ డెడికేషన్.
రాక్షసుల చేత చిక్కాడు.
అల్టిమేట్లీ వాస్ కాట్ ఇన్ ది హ్యాండ్స్ ఆఫ్ ద డెమన్స్ దేర్.
ఆ రాక్షసుల చేత చిక్కినప్పుడు రావణ దగ్గర పట్టుకుని పోయారు.
హీ వాస్ టేకెన్ టు రావణ.
రావణుడు వీడిని చూచి హనుమంతుడిని, అరే కింద కూర్చో అన్నాడు.
హీ సెడ్ గెట్ డౌన్ ఫస్ట్, సిట్ ఆన్ ద గ్రౌండ్.
రావణుడు పెద్ద పైన సింహాసనం పైన కూర్చున్నాడు.
రావణ సాట్ దేర్ ఆన్ ద థ్రోన్.
చీ, ఈ దుర్మార్గుడు పైన కూర్చోవటము, రామదాసుడైన నేను కింద కూర్చోవటమా, ఇది తగింది కాదు.
ఇట్స్ నాట్ ప్రాపర్ ఫర్ దిస్ వికెడ్ మ్యాన్ టు సిట్ ఆన్ ద టాప్ అండ్ సర్వెంట్ ఆఫ్ ద లార్డ్ టు సిట్ ఆన్ ద గ్రౌండ్.
తోకను పెంచాడు పెంచాడు, చుట్టాడు 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 చుట్టాడు, ఈ యొక్క రావణాసుడి కంటే పైన పోయి కూర్చున్నాడు.
He made his tail prolonged more and more, coiled round and round, occupied a higher level than Ravana himself.
వచ్చాడు రావణాసుడు.
అండ్ రావణా స్టార్టెడ్ క్వశ్చనింగ్.
కోతి జాతివి నీవు, మన మెల్ల చెరతివి, నిన్నెవడు పంపించరా?
యూఆర్ ఎ మంకీ, హూ సెంట్ యూ హియర్?
కోతి జాతివి నీవు, నిన్నెవడు పంపించరా?
యూ బిలాంగ్ టు దట్ రేస్ ఆఫ్ మంకీస్, హూ సెంట్
యూ హియర్? చెప్తున్నాడు హనుమంతు, నీ చెల్లె ముక్కు చెవులటి కోసి పంపినయ్య, రాచదొర నన్నం పెరా.
అండ్ స్మైలింగ్లీ హనుమాన్ సెడ్, ద వన్ హూ హాస్ కట్ ఆఫ్ ద నోస్ అండ్ ఇయర్ ఆఫ్ యువర్ సిస్టర్ హాస్ సెంట్ మీ హియర్.
అతనే నన్ను పంపించాడు అన్నాడు.
హీ ఓన్లీ సెంట్ మీ హియర్.
ఎంత చక్కని సూట్ అయినటువంటి మాటలు.
వాట్ డైరెక్ట్ ప్రాంప్ట్ ఆన్సర్ హీ గేవ్.
ఈ హనుమంతుని యొక్క శక్తి సామర్థ్యములు పూర్తి రాములే లీనమైపోయినాడు హనుమంతుల్లో.
అండ్ ఫ్యాక్ట్ దేర్ వీ ఫైండ్ ఇన్ ది కెపాసిటీ పవర్.
అదే సాయుధ్యం యొక్క తత్వము.
దట్ ఇస్ ద నేచర్ ఆఫ్ టోటల్ మర్జర్ ఆఫ్
భక్తుల్లో భగవంతుడు లీనమై ఉంటున్నాడు.
ఇన్ ఫ్యాక్ట్ దేర్ ఇస్ డివినిటీ ఇన్ ఎ డివోటీ.
రాక్షసులంతా తిరుగుతున్నారు అటు ఇటు.
ఆల్ ద డెమన్స్ వర్ మూవింగ్ అబౌట్.
లంకనంతా అగ్గి పెట్టాడు.
ద హోల్ లంక వాస్ సెట్ ఆన్ ఫైర్.
వీరు పాపం కేకలు వేస్తూ తిరుగుతున్నారు.
పీపుల్ వర్ షౌటింగ్
యదమ్మ ఈ కోతి, దిన్నెవరు బంపిరే నాతి, మా వాడ గోడాడ చేసనే.
హూ సెండ్ దిస్ మంకీ దట్ హెస్ స్పాయిల్డ్ అండ్ డిస్టర్బ్ ది ఎంటైర్ ప్రొవిన్స్.
ఇంటికి నీ పంటించిన వాళ్ళు గంటి ఎవరింటికి బోధుమే. వింటిని రాములు బంటులు జానకి కంటికి చల్లనాయనే. ఇటువంటి పనుల ఇంటికి మింటికి నంటిన గద చెడమ్మ ఈ కోతి, దిన్నెవ్వరు పంపే నాతి, మా వాడ గోడాడ చేసనే. అందరూ తిరుగుతూ కానీ విభీషణుని యొక్క భార్య సరమ్మ బిడ్డలు రెండు చేతులు జోడించి నమస్కరిస్తూ ఉంటున్నారు హనుమంతులకు.
wife of Vibhishana, Sarama, and the children of Vibhishana, they could know, and then they offered their prayers.
వారు ఇలాంటి పవిత్రమైనటువంటి దర్శనం మాకు లభ్యమైంది.
They were so happy.
రాముని మేము చూడలేము.
We can't
see Rama. దాసుని ద్వారా మేము చూస్తున్నాము.
We could experience Rama.
రామదాసుడు ఒక పరిశుద్ధమైన అద్దం వంటి వాడు.
And the servant of Rama.
అద్దంలోని రామచంద్రుని మేము చూడగలుగుతున్నాము.
There in that mirror we see the reflection of Ramachandra.
దాసుని ఎట్ట ఉండాలంటే పవిత్రమైనటువంటి పరిశుద్ధమైన అద్దం వలె తయారు కావాలి.
A devotee should be like a pure mirror, clean mirror.
ఏ విధమైనటువంటి అహంకార ఆడంబరమైనటువంటి మాలిన్యం ఇందులో ప్రవేశించకూడదు.
There should not be any dirt of ego and pomp on clean mirror.
So that you listened was the clip, and I think so much was covered by Swami in that, and in fact I think many of those points we'll have to go into detail. But one standout thing which Swami at the end, first of all, initially Swami spoke about the pride aspect of, you know, Hanuman coming out there, where that confidence in Rama, the confidence in his devotion to Rama, Swami said it reflected in many ways in the confidence with which he declared who he was. And Swami was saying that, you know, that is what is referred to as Yad Bhavam Tad Bhavati. That when you think of the Lord, when you are all the time in the thoughts of the Lord, what you speak will actually be the Lord's words. Because Swami said that he reflected Rama in those, you know, in the accuracy of the way he described who sent him, and, you know, the answers which he gave.
A little point that I want to add here. I think I've told this before also. A person, you know, once asked me in a satsang as to when you say develop faith in God, at the same time Swami also says that the foundation for this mansion of life is self-confidence. So aren't they contrary to each other? Should you have confidence in yourself or confidence in God? Because confidence in God is faith and confidence in yourself is self-confidence. So this is a doubt that arises, but once we look through a little deep, we realize the difference, because we realize that there's no difference between the two. Because in its, when Swami says self-confidence is the foundation for the mansion of life, Swami is referring to self-confidence with a capital S, the self which is the divinity within us. So having faith in God is not different from having self-confidence, because when I say faith, it's possibly my confidence in the Swami outside. And when I say self-confidence, it is my confidence in the Swami inside. So that is why in the discourse also, you know, Swami mentioned one line to say that there's nothing like self-confidence. He had complete faith in Swami, in his Lord. That might seem a little strange, because how can you think that Hanuman possibly was any less in self-confidence? But his self-confidence is the self-confidence with a capital S, which is based on faith in God. A person who has complete faith in God, 100% has self-confidence. These two are not conflicting. They are different terms for the same thing.
Right. And the other thing which Swami mentions towards the end of that clip is Swami saying that...
Mirror.
You know, the way you mirror... In a sense, he says that there is no quality of your own which stands there.
Hmm.
He said, when you say that I'm going to do whatever Swami asked me to do, and you know, you're just going to be a reflection of Swami's command, he says that that's when you become a perfect mirror with no flaws of yours and without your character standing in between in the reflection of the Lord.
Exactly. See, in such circumstance, tell me what's the difference between faith in Rama and self-confidence. If you're a perfect mirror, because there stands Rama in front of you and you're also reflecting Rama within you, so it's one and the same. And this statement that Swami says that Hanuman told Ravana, Dasoham Kosalendrasya, I'm the servant of Rama, it's interesting, because there is a story that goes that Hanuman returns to Rama after the whole conquest, after this whole Lanka episode. And then Rama asks him to relive all that happened and narrate what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
When Hanuman narrates this part where he answers Ravana saying, I am the servant of Rama, Rama apparently makes Hanuman pause and asks Hanuman, Tell me, Hanuman, tell me honestly, what do you feel that you are my servant? What do you feel is your relationship with me? And this also Swami has narrated in his discourses. Only this circumstance part is a story that I found. But the answer that Hanuman gives Rama, Swami has narrated many times in his discourses. It's so beautiful. Because when Rama asks this question of Hanuman, Hanuman says, Lord, when I think of myself as the body, at the bodily level, you are the master, I am the servant. When I consider myself as the mind, at a mental level, you are the Lord, I am a devotee. But when I consider myself as that eternal Atma that pervades everything, when I am in that consciousness, you know, when I am that, then you and I are one. There is no difference. So this is the answer that Hanuman gives Rama, and Rama is very pleased with. This is an episode that Swami has narrated in many of his discourses, wherein when Ravana asks, who are you? He says, I am a servant of Rama. It also shows Hanuman's intelligence, because he speaks to each person at the level at which he is. Ravana is steeped in body consciousness. He has got ego. He is lusting behind a woman and he's having all. He is definitely considering himself as the body. That is why he has such pride. He feels that he can't be vanquished. He feels that he can take up arms against Rama. So when Ravana asks, who are you? Hanuman has the tact and intelligence to understand that Ravana is at the bodily level. And therefore he gives him the bodily level answer. He says that I am the servant of Rama. But when Rama is asking Hanuman, you know, who are you? What is the relationship? Rama is the Atma. He knows everything. So therefore Hanuman reveals everything as it is. He says, when I am thinking of myself as the body, I am the servant. When I am thinking of myself as the mind, you are the Lord, I am the devotee. But in reality, at the Atmic level, you and I are one.
Right. In fact, this particular answer is told in different ways. And in fact, the other way which Swami talks of it is, you know, Swami says, when I think that I am the body, I am the servant. You know, you are the master and I am the devotee, I am the servant. Mm-hmm. Swami says, and the next step which he says is, when I think that I am an individual, you know, mm-hmm. when I think that I am a jivatma, he says, I am an amsha of the Lord. Okay, he says that I am a chip of the block, you know, in that sense. And when I think that I am the Atma, I and my Rama are one. So it's almost like saying that, you know, the closeness which comes when you say that I am the servant and you are the master, and I am subordinate to you. I do whatever you say. And when you say that I am an amsha of the Lord, it's almost like, you know, I am. It's almost like father and son relationship. I inherit your qualities. I inherit your divinity. Mm. And when you talk of yourself as the Atma, you're saying that there is no difference between you and me. And typically saying that as you give up body consciousness and as you give up this individual consciousness or, you know, Ahankara, Swami says, you go towards that. And as we have been following in each one of the paths, be it Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, you know, we see that each one of these paths has the ability to take you right up to the ultimate. And this answer which Hanuman gives is that, you know, path within this path, that where you start off by saying that I am the disciple, I am the servant, I am the dasa of the Lord, and where you, as you give up this body consciousness, as you give up this consciousness with the personality that you are, you tend towards this ultimate state where, you know, the devotee merges with the Lord.
Reminded of what Swami says about Jesus also. He started off by saying, I am the messenger of the Lord. Then he said that I am the son of God. Finally he said, I and my father are one. You know, this progression more or less along similar lines is seen there. Another interpretation that is often given to these answers that Hanuman gave is so beautiful. People say that it reflects the different relationships or different schools of thought that devotees follow in achieving God, especially in the Bharatiya culture. So when you consider yourself as the servant of God, you know, God is the master and I am the servant. So the sole mission of life is to do whatever the Lord says. They say this is Dvaita Bhava, duality, what we call duality. Translation in English is duality. So in Dvaita there is always two, the Lord and myself. Then when I consider,
one of the standout quality of Dvaita Marga is the belief that the devotee can never become the Lord.
Yes.
It's really like, I'm always will be, at the service of the Lord. I mean, it's blasphemous for me to think that I and the Lord can become one.
That's why it's called Dvaita. Dvaita. So since you can't become one,
presence of two.
You have to be two.
Right.
Vishishta Dvaita is called qualified non-dualism, which says that, it's like a bridge between Dvaita and Advaita. In Advaita, before coming to Advaita, let me stick to Vishishta Advaita. So, here it says that the Lord is there, I am there, we too can never become one. Here it is, the Lord is there, I am there, and with effort, I can, become one with the Lord.
In the process of purification, you can become one.
Elevate yourself to the level of the Lord.
Right.
So, that is the devotee and God, that relationship. That is Vishishta Advaita. And Advaita, there is no God, there is no devotee, everything is the same, that is the Advaita form.
Right. The way it differentiates between Advaita, Vishishta Advaita and Advaita is, in Vishishta Advaita there's a concept of a journey, that you're talking about, you're starting as a devotee, you go through a process and then you reach the level of divinity.
Hmm.
But Advaita says that there was never two at all. The idea of two was always an illusion. And one day the illusion just lifts and you realize that there was never a journey, there was never a starting point, there was never an ending point. Right.
And
before we go on, talking about Dvaita, Vishishta Advaita and Dvaita, and the point which you made in the initial part of the discussion where you said, where it was mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita that jnana will be conferred on you if you follow these paths. This is typically what Swami told in a discourse where he was talking about, Dvaita, Vishishta Advaita and Advaita. My Swami said, a devotee can only go to the level of perfecting Vishishta Advaita. That you can be in a perfect state of Vishishta Advaita and the Lord will come and confer Advaita on you. Advaita can never be earned through effort.
But at the same time, that should not be a discouraging statement, because all those who get Advaita are those who have put in effort. I feel it's like when Alexander Fleming was searching for something else, he discovered pencil.
Right.
So it's called serendipity. It's called discovery by chance. So when there were a few of these critics who tried to, take away credit, saying that, come on, after all, it was a serendipitous discovery. It was, I think, Louis Pasteur who said that fortune favors the trained mind. Because you need to have the ability to realize that this is a fortune here that I've got, how many apples have fallen on how many people's heads? But it was Newton who felt that there's something about apple falling on my head. Actually, we don't know if apple really fell on his head, but that's the story. So in the same way, it would be absolutely foolish and stupid on our part to think that since it's God who has to confer, there's no need for me to do anything. Why am I doing sadhana? Why am I doing this? Because jnana will be conferred on me. It's not like that. Just like fortune favors the trained mind, I feel that this experience of Advaita will favor the sadhana, will favor the sadhak over a non-sadhak.
And, talking about Dasya Bhakti and this journey of this, threefold journey within, we were talking about the comparison between Hanuman and the other people like Vibhishana and Sugriva. Now, what is interesting is, all of these people served Rama during that short period when he was, looking for Mother Sita. But after that, they all went back to doing what they were doing. They were always ready for at the beck and call of Rama, but they went back to doing what they were doing. But it was only Hanuman who literally made it his full-time, he became a full-time devotee, a full-time dasa. I think that's what it is. Because when we're talking about the other paths, starting from Shravanam, Kirtanam, there is a certain amount of joy in listening about the Lord, talking about the Lord, or to be of use to the Lord, to be of service. And there is a certain amount of satisfaction when you're able to achieve something and come and offer it at Swami's feet. But then when you come to this Dasya Bhakti, you are, you're literally got God intoxicated. You're saying that I enjoy being in Swami's presence, I want to do it all the time. I enjoy being in Swami's service, I want to do it all the time. And that is where seamlessly, that there is this desire to become one with the Lord. If you talk about saints like Annamaya,
be with the Lord always.
Right, it starts with being with the Lord always, communion. At one point it says that, to think of the Lord is so beautiful, to sing of the Lord is so beautiful, how much more beautiful and blissful it would be to become one with the Lord. And without your knowledge, you might not have started off with Advaita in your mind, you might not have started with this goal of merging with the Lord in mind, But just that bliss drives you to seek and desire for the state of oneness.
A person who is slightly critical of what you said might just say, you know, he might say that you're being unfair to Vibhishana, being unfair to Sugriva, saying they went back to doing whatever they were doing, it's only Hanuman who continued. Because, you know, if you make comparisons with Swami's physical form also, there were a few who got the chance to actually go with Swami, go to his room, serve him. And I might say that, yeah, I also wanted to do that, but it's just that I'm supposed to be at Radio Sai, I'm supposed to be here, or I'm supposed to be taking care of the organization in New Zealand, you know, whatever. That's the role that Swami has given me and I'm doing it. It would be unfair to say that I went back to my job and only these people stayed actually with Swami. And I think we should emphasize, so that what you said is not misunderstood, to show that it's not about what you do physically. It's again coming back to that intention and attitude. See, because when we see Hanuman also, it's not as if he had a job, you know. He had nothing to do with Rama. In fact, story goes that when Rama's coronation took place, now Rama needn't do anything because he's now the emperor. And there's an elaborate list of duties that have to be performed. It is said that Lakshmana, Bharata, I don't know who exactly, but they plotted and they said that, you know what, this Hanuman, every time he has served the Lord so much, I think we need to give him a rest. So they made a list of duties and allotted the duties to different people. And when the announcement of these duties were made, Hanuman was there, because Hanuman's intention was to be with Rama always. So to be with Rama always, and yet here was a situation where he is not able to be with Rama because all duties related to the physical Rama have already been taken. So when Hanuman was told this, he said, no, no, please search. There must be some duty, at least something I want to do for Rama. And they said, no, there is nothing. There is actually nothing. You go through, and they went through the list 4-5 times, and there was absolutely no task let out from the time Rama gets up in the morning till the time he goes to bed at night. That is when Hanuman, you know, thinks for a while and then says, see, as per custom tradition, we have this in India where when somebody yawns, we snap our finger in front of the yawn, you know, not in front of somebody else's mouth, but we ourselves do it. I don't know what is the purpose for that, but it's a habit that most of us have got. I'm thinking possibly it's a way to hide your gawking open mouth. But anyway, we snap our fingers in front of the yawn. So Hanuman says that since Rama is the emperor, why should he snap his fingers? When he yawns, let me snap the finger, at least let me do this little duty for Rama. So they think, okay, it's fine. You know, this small work let him do for Rama, no big deal, because we are all doing awesome things. Somebody is washing Rama's clothes, somebody is making his bed. All are doing fantastic duties for Rama. The small thing we can give Hanuman, no problem. But then they see that wherever Rama is going, Hanuman is accompanying him, and they ask him, you know, boss, what's the big deal? What is it that you're doing? And Hanuman says, how do I know when my Lord is going to yawn? I have to be with Rama every time because I don't know when he will yawn. And that's why I will be with Rama always. So you see, even when efforts were made to keep Hanuman away from Rama, and it's not as if fortune favored and made him Rama's favorite and he was there at his bedside, just because Hanuman had that intense desire and drive to be with Rama, he ended up being with Rama. So, as you rightly said, it's not about what I actually do as my profession or my task. It's about what is my desire within. Do I intensely desire that I want to be with Swami always? I want to do His work always. I think if we do that, we would have definitely taken our first few steps towards Dasya.
I think absolutely right what you said. Because, you know, if we have to take Hanuman as an example and to emulate what Hanuman did, we will have to have the avatar physically in our midst. You know, otherwise, you cannot replicate what Hanuman did as a servant, if not for a physical Lord in your presence. And I think that's a question which most people will ask, that, you know, all right, if Swami was there and I aspired to get that sort of a service to Swami, that's a different thing. But now, in the absence of Swami, that's why there is a subtle aspect of Dasyam, which we'll come to. But, you know, this point, which this episode which you narrated of Hanuman seeking that service. He was very smart in many ways. You know, one thing was he picked an activity which
unpredictable,
which was left out and which nobody else would have picked. And also he picked an activity which he knew will keep him close to Rama at all times. I think that is also a sukshma buddhi, yes, in that. And because, you know, the reason why we choose Dasyam as a thing is not because the Lord needs you, not because the Lord needs a servant. It's because that servitude will bind you to the Lord and can take you closer to Swami. I think that is a quality. I'm reminded of one story which, you know, many of these devotees would say of the past. There used to be one lady who used to sit outside Mandir, and, you know, very ordinary lady. She used to sell peanuts. You know, that was her profession, because that's the thing which you can easily get. You go out into the fields, even now, into any of these villages.
Especially in Andhra Pradesh.
In Andhra Pradesh, you will find that plantations of groundnut is, you know, in plenty. So it's easily procurable. And this lady used to come and, you know, sit outside the ashram gates and sell peanuts. And she would hardly make any money. She did not
she
have
would
children.
Make peanuts. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, she had very less. So, and she used to come and sit inside Mandir to have Swami's darshan. And she used to sit in a corner because she would see that all of these people come from the cities, so well dressed. So she felt odd going and mingling with them, the way she was dressed and the way she, you know, the work that she was doing. But Swami would invariably come to her and speak to her. You know, that's Swami always. So one day when Swami came to her, her name was Konamma. Okay, Swami came to her and Swami asked her, it seems, Konamma, what do you do for your food? So she said, Swami, I sell peanuts. You know, I make little money. Whenever I get money, I eat. If I don't get money, I probably go hungry that day. So Swami asked her, will you do some work for me? Is there anything that you can do for me? So she said, Swami, I have nothing. I mean, I have no talent in that sense to do anything. So then she offered, she said, Swami, I can wash vessels. You know, probably that needs no, you know, special talent or abilities. I can wash vessels. Maybe I can do that. So Swami gave her the opportunity to wash vessels in his kitchen.
Oh.
Imagine. So he said, oh, you can wash vessels, then come to my kitchen and wash vessels after every meal. So that became her job, you know, and she used to come and religiously do that. Then she took up another job. She found that early in the morning, Swami had to have bath, and, you know, those days there were no geysers and all that. So they used to have this tank which had to be filled with water and which would be heated with firewood, and Swami would have bath with that hot water. Mm-hmm. So that water had to be brought from Chitravati. So this lady took up that job of, you know, 3:30 in the morning, she used to go to Chitravati, fill 2 buckets of water, carry it all the way, take it up to Swami's room and fill that tank. And this would take her at least 2 hours, you know, 3:30 to 4:30 or 5:30 in the morning. And she did this for many, many years, it seems. And there is that beautiful incident apparently when one day suddenly she develops appendicitis. And Swami takes her to Bangalore, physically. Swami takes her, and Dr. Padmanabhan is there. Swami takes her in his car. And in the middle of the night, they go and wake up a doctor and they say that there is this patient, you come and perform surgery for her. And that entire journey, Swami takes care of her. So many times Swami materializes Vibhuti, puts for her, and Swami says, you know, your pain will come down. And goes there, and this doctor says that, you know, you've suddenly come, I don't have an anesthesiologist to perform the surgery.
Anesthetist,
I'm sorry. So Swami says, I will be the anesthetist, you know. Again, materializes Vibhuti, puts it for her, and, you know, she's tranquilized. And the surgery is done. After surgery is done, Swami is waiting outside the room. Okay, and Dr. Padmanabhan comes and tells Swami, why don't we go home? You can come home, come in the morning. Swami says, no, I have to wait here, because when she wakes up, she will look for me. Okay, and Swami is sitting there in the bench outside for 4 or 5 hours for this lady to come out of her unconscious state. And as soon as she comes out, Swami comes and says, Konamma, I'm here, don't worry, you're absolutely fine. And this lady starts crying. He said, Swami, why did you put yourself through this? You know, I could have taken care, I mean, people would have taken care of me. Were you waiting all this while just, you know, so that you can see me? Swami said, yes, of course. And Swami went on to say, how many years you served me? You know, did I have to tell you once more, did I go one day without hot water, you know, be it rain or sunshine, whatever it was, every day it was there because you were there to serve me. And I mean, I owe this to you. You know, a typical thing of why we all as devotees will come to this state as a progressive step in Navaveda Bhakti, come to this desire to, you know, reach the state of Dasyam is, I think somewhere in our mind, you know, we have this business attitude. I know this is going to get me close to Swami.
Yes.
Because this is serving the Lord. And before we go to the subtle point of serving the Lord, we know that this is a path, this is a means by which we can really pull Swami to ourselves.
At this point, I think we will take a little break, because after that break, as Prem said, we will be going into the subtler aspects of Dasyam and the other qualities that come along automatically as we develop this. All that after this little break. Don't go away anywhere. We have got a lot many more examples and stories coming up. All that after this little break.
ಔಪನಿಷ ಮೂಲ ಅಂಕುಶ
Welcome back, dear listeners. You know, before we went into this break, in my enthusiasm and eagerness, I just said that don't go anywhere, a lot more stories are coming. I forgot to see the clock. I was just looking at my notes, and that's why I said that. The clock here shows 1:52, which means in the next few minutes or so, we have to wrap up this. So, all that I can say is, make sure you're here with us next week, because definitely there are some really beautiful insights and stories to follow, which we shall, as I said, do it in the second part of the satsang next week. But Prem, possibly we can just give our listeners an idea as to where this discussion will be heading towards. Because Dasyam looks all hunky-dory and looks fantastic when you have a physical entity, a physical representation of the Lord whom you can serve. But that is like a bonus time. It's like a one in a million event that happens on earth, the descent of the Lord. Even now, though we are just a few years away from the descent of the Lord, we don't have the physical frame of the Lord now to whom we carry out service or to whom we become a servant to. So I think what we should be focusing on is something that is foremost in all of our minds. That is, how do we practice Dasyam in the physical absence of the Lord? I think that should be forming the main body of our discussion during next week.
And obviously, I mean, that's a very, very deep thought in itself, and it'll need a lot of elaboration. But I mean, it's so true that, you know, just a few years have passed, but almost that's a question which is coming up in every forum. Yesterday I was listening to a panel discussion which is part of a retreat in the US. Mm. You know, there this question comes up. And we had a summer course, and they had a panel, and this question was thrown up to the panel from the students. So it's a very important question, but
how do we serve Swami?
Right, how do
when
we
Swami
serve
is not there?
In the absence of Swami. And
physical absence, huh?
Right. I think as a start off for that, I think what do you need, first of all, to serve Swami? In His absence or in His presence? I think what is that one quality you need to be able to be a dasa? I think if we know that, then we can probably stretch it to what you will do in the absence of Swami, what you did in the presence of Swami, and how you can extrapolate it.
And I think in order to know what is that one thing that we need in order to be a dasa of Swami, again, we have to see the life of Hanuman the Chiranjeevi. Hanuman is called a Chiranjeevi because it is believed that Hanuman has no death. He is forever. This in itself is surprising because, you know, it feels as if when Rama is not there, how can Hanuman live? Because Rama was Hanuman's life breath. In fact, that is the reason why he said, I will snap my fingers because I want to be with Rama always. And I think that before Rama completed his avatarhood, I think there was possibly an open invite given to all the citizens of Ayodhya to join him because he is leaving. It really makes you wonder, why didn't Hanuman join Rama? You know, knowing the answer for this will also hold the answer as to what it needs to be a true dasa of Swami. And I think that we will take up in the next week. possibly Prem, you can complete the narration of that story.
Right, absolutely. As you said, we all know that Rama's avatar, the Rama avatar, comes to a conclusion. There is an episode which Swami narrates about how Hanuman, how Lakshmana ends his life. I think that's a story which was even enacted in front of Swami many times. We'll probably leave it for the Ramkatha Satsang. We'll not go into that story. Mm-hmm. But after Lakshmana leaves, Rama says that it's time to conclude the Rama avatar. So an invite, as you said, is sent out that Rama is going to conclude his avatar. Everybody who wishes to join him can join him. And I think it's the first time and probably the last time it happened like that. And it is believed that people came as far as even from Kishkintha. Even the Vanaras, many of them came to join Rama in, you know, in conclusion of their life.
And how he ended his...
All the citizens of Ayodhya who wanted to join Rama walk into the Sarayu River. Just literally walk into the Sarayu River and end their life. That's how the avatar comes to a conclusion. So, I mean, needless to say, one of the first people who would have come forward would have been Hanuman. You know, Hanuman would have been most ready and happily would have come forward. You know, not with the sense of remorse or resentment. Mm. He would have been the happiest and the first one to spring forward. But to him, it seems Rama turns and says, Hanuman, you should stay on. You should continue to live after I'm gone. And without even a moment's hesitation or resistance, Hanuman says, you know, whatever you say is my, you know, is command for me. And he stays on. And I think that is what defines Hanuman as a dasa. As we said, there are so many characters in the Ramayana, so many characters in the Mahabharata who showed the dasya bhakti. But why is Hanuman an epitome of dasya bhakti? Because that readiness to give up even his topmost priority desire and to follow the command of the Lord.
It's really a paradoxical situation, right? My top priority is my Lord. But in order to fulfill that top priority, I have to give up my top priority. It looks like a paradox, but it's not a paradox because we have a living example of that. Hanuman the Chiranjeevi. Excuse me. The being who lives eternally. And dear listeners, this single episode, I think we will be starting our next satsang by reiterating this episode, because this single episode gives us a clear indication as to what it requires for us to develop Dasya Bhakti, that devotion that Hanuman embodies towards Rama, for us to embody towards our Sai Rama.
So with that, dear listeners, we'll, I think, conclude this week's episode. As we said, we will continue our discussion on Dasya Bhakti next week. So do join us. As we said, there are a lot more stories we would like to share, and we couldn't share all of them today. So as the tradition has been going on in this series, each of the parts has taken us 2 weeks to complete. So Dasya Bhakti 2, we will try to complete it in 2 weeks, because there is so much to be spoken about. Swami has spoken so much about Hanuman himself. But we will contain it to 2 weeks, so we'll conclude it next week. So do join us again next week. With much humility, we offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet. On the other side of this bhajan which we're going to play for you, you will have Love to Love with Chandu Vijay. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram. Thank you.
ఆనందంగా